Okay, are we situated? Somehow or other? But we're not on the screen. That should have come already. You're not getting anything. Maybe we should forget about our devices. Is it coming, actually? I could just try to write all this on a board. Oh, it's actually coming. Look at that. Indian time. Okay. This is March 4th, 2011 in Mayapur, Varna and Devotee Care. This is a very revolutionary seminar, so I don't know. The technology gods are conspiring against our seeing it. That's right, I'll just hold it. I don't want it falling under my computer. I'll just hold it. No, just forget it. Can you put it up higher? Is it possible to get it up?
Yeah, we can put it.
Okay, well, while all of our technology people are getting situated, I developed this seminar after speaking with one temple president in Europe who really enlightened me and gave me a new way of thinking about building a society. So I thought maybe whoever's recording device this is, it's singing. Is this somebody's recording device? Does this belong to anybody? It's singing. Okay. Can you see that? Does it work?
Sort of, a little bit.
All right. So if we think about ISKCON, and just this morning I was listening to Srila Prabhupada give a class on the 10th anniversary of ISKCON. He was talking about the purpose of ISKCON is to know who is our Father, who is God, to have a family concept of our real family. So I think as far as ISKCON goes, or I should say, do all of you understand English, everybody? Am I speaking too fast? It's okay. If I start speaking too fast, or if I say some word you do not know, then please ask me. Is that all right? So if we think about the word ISKCON, so we are certainly very international, correct? We have no problem with the international part. And the Krishna consciousness part, we do pretty well. We have nice deity worship, sankirtan, a japa retreat, so many books. But if we think about the S part, so how far have we gone in forming a society? So if we study Shastra and Srila Prabhupada's instructions, we may discover what is this missing piece as to why we don't have the kind of care for devotees in society that we would like. So I'm going to ask you, and you don't have to be very specific, but just in a general way, what do you think is really missing in terms of care for devotees? Can anybody suggest?
Love.
As far as you see in ISKCON, what kind of things are missing? Or what are the biggest things that people complain about?
Fault finding.
Okay, criticizing, yes.
Senior devotees often feel disregarded and not taken care of appropriately.
So devotees feel that they're not taken care of properly. Oh, when they're older. Okay, so taking care of older. You know, when ISKCON started, we didn't think about that at all. Because practically everybody was 15 to 28. If you were 30, you were very old.
And we also cared about emotional.
Emotional care. Poor medical care. Okay. What else is really missing? If we look around at ISKCON and we say, what's just not really there? Or what's there, but it could be a lot better?
Deeper relationships.
All right. Some common sense. There's one letter from Srila Prabhupada. I think it's in regard to taking care of Tulsi. And he answers a question by saying, that takes some common sense, and if you don't have any, ask somebody who does. Have you heard complaints about morals and ethics, ordinary material ethics? Do we get a lot of complaints about that? So those were the two main areas that I saw. I saw that morals and ethics, material dharma. Not transcendental dharma, we seem to do pretty well. Hearing and chanting about Krishna, material dharma, we don't quite do as well, do we? So that, and physical things like medical care. Or the verse I was given to speak on the other morning that says there should be schools in different parts of the world. So we have over 400 centers and only 15 schools. And of those schools, almost all of them are in India. One in Australia, one in New Zealand, two communities in America, one in Canada, two communities in Europe. So we're missing that kind of thing. We're missing schools. We're missing medical care. We're missing as kind of a family atmosphere and relationships. We're missing morals and ethics. So we're going to be examining what part of society is required to have those things. So first we're going to look at the fact that Srila Prabhupada in many, many places, this is just one small example quote where Prabhupada's saying that the Vedas give both material needs and spiritual salvation. There's so many places where Srila Prabhupada and the Shastra speaks about a happy material life. But we really don't have the philosophy that we want just life to be miserable and then, okay, then you get salvation at the end. But to have a prosperous life with natural prosperity, but where people are happy, where they're healthy, isn't it? Haven't you heard that so many purports and so many classes of Srila Prabhupada? Am I correct? Now here's an example of Lord Ramchandra, who cared for the citizens, how like a father. Again, this theme of family. Now this again is a very typical purport by Srila Prabhupada, where he says here that Krishna has given us everything, as this list, grains, milk, fruit, wood, stone, sugar, milk, jewels, cotton, salt, water, vegetables, in sufficient quantity to feed and care for the human race of the world, as well as living beings on each and every planet. So that Prabhupada's making this point often, that Krishna's desire, the desire of the Acharyas, is that everybody live a happy life in the material world, that they get all their necessities. Silk, even. Prabhupada's listing silk as a necessity. Jewels. Now, if we really, this is something also that you can meditate on. This world is often compared to a prison. Now, do they give prisoners jewels and silk? You ever heard? Or flowers? You ever heard of a prison that supplies flowers? So Krishna is supplying us, the prisoners. Do you know what would be really nice? Could somebody get me that cushion? This asana is strange. So Krishna is supplying us even with those sort of things. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's like slanted. So I feel that I'm falling off. I've also meditated on the fact that there's so many different kinds of fruits. Krishna could have given just apples or just bananas. And even bananas, how many different kinds of bananas are there? So many different kinds. And this is an example of Krishna caring. So you may know this story, that Jarasandha imprisoned so many kings, and those kings appealed to Krishna for release. So Krishna came and he had Bhima fight with Jarasandha and kill him. Now generally, if one king kills another king, he takes over the kingdom. But Krishna did something incredible in that he put Jarasandha's son, Sahadev, in charge of the kingdom, which was practically unknown. And then how he took good care of the imprisoned kings. He made sure, and it's interesting, he made sure not only that they got a bath, that they got food, that they got clothes, but that they got things in relationship to kings. They got honor. A king expects to be honored. And made sure that he took care of them, not just physically, but also psychologically. Psychologically. Now, the kings all saw Krishna face to face. They were spiritually awakened. And still, Krishna made sure that they were given psychological care. All right, let's look for a minute at a couple things that Srila Prabhupada says about ISKCON and what ISKCON members need. So if you ask most ISKCON members, I think you'll say that they want their material necessities in a peaceful way. Most devotees are not interested in a grand material arrangement. Maybe a few, but I haven't met so many. What I've seen is that when devotees are very wealthy, their grand material arrangement tends to be used for preaching. Like I visited several different devotees I visited in various parts of the world whose home is bigger than many temples. But what do? They use it for a temple. They'll have some huge temple room. They have a lot of programs at their home. I haven't met very many devotees who want some gorgeous material arrangement just for themselves. So generally devotees they're satisfied with something that's peaceful and fairly simple, and they want facility to do their sadhana. There's some nice quotes here where Prabhupada's saying, take care of the devotees. And we have two very similar quotes. Our ISKCON should be taken as being a family based upon love and trust. Another one, our society is like one big family and our relationship should be based on love and trust. So a family naturally takes care of each other on all levels. Okay, now I'm going to do something that's a little revolutionary. Revolutionary because, frankly, I don't hear this discussed very much. And as I said in the beginning, the concept of this was brought to me by one of our leaders in Europe who was speaking on this topic. And I said, oh, yeah, that is the key. So we're not going to be looking at ashramas, we're going to be looking at varnas. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. So we're going to look at the Varnas in different areas. First of all, what do they create? What do they produce? So the Brahmanas produce wisdom. They create wisdom in the society, which is a kind of wealth, isn't it? I read a story once of when people used to travel more by ship, and there were some merchants traveling. And on the ship was one teacher, and they were asking him, "Where's your goods to sell? You don't have any goods to sell." And then when the ship was shipwrecked, all of the traders, they lost their goods. And the teacher had his knowledge in his mind, so he was able to go and make a living. So the Brahmanas are contributing wisdom and knowledge to the society, guidance. It's quite interesting that Srila Prabhupada, in speaking about all of the Varnas, talks about Brahminical culture pervading all of the Varnas. Now, what do the Kshatriyas produce? They make sure there's peace in the society. They make sure that there's not criminal elements, that there's law and order. And they give care and protection. What do Kshatriyas build in society? They collect tax money. What do they spend the tax money on? Benefits for the citizens. Can you name some? What benefits do Kshatriyas provide for the citizens with their tax money?
Hospitals.
Educational programs. So schools, colleges, universities, what else? They clean the streets.
Social welfare.
Excuse me?
Social welfare.
Like
supporting poor people.
So making sure that people who are poor or crippled or blind or, you know, orphans, that they're taken care of. What else do the Kshatriyas do with their tax money? Any other things they do? Security for the people. Okay, they provide the police force, the military. Other things.
Fire brigades.
Okay, they make sure there's something for to put out fires. They also provide all of the codes for safety in a society. What you can do and what you can't do. For example, we see with the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium, I noticed that all the workers have hard hats. You all know what hard hats are? Those hats they wear to protect their head. And they have covered shoes and metal scaffolding. Usually in India, it's just bamboo scaffolding. And they're wearing sandals and nothing on their head. And if they fall, oh well, too bad for them. So the government sets standards of safety that have to be followed. The government sets standards for electricity, how many outlets can be in a room, what kind of voltage there can be. It also provides utilities, make sure the people have water, they dig wells. Modern day, make sure the people have power. Basically, the main thing that the Kshatriyas are producing is care. Then what do the Vaishyas produce? They produce wealth, and they're supposed to produce honest wealth, real wealth. So I gave a talk at an investment firm in London, and I was talking about how businessmen need to produce genuine, honest wealth. And of course, an investment company is producing all imaginary, cheating wealth. So they were not very happy with that. So what is honest? Give me an example of honest wealth. Grains, okay, rice, wheat, yes?
Cows
that are providing milk, also the ox power, the dung for fertilizer.
Even an industrial.
Even what?
Even an industrial
from mainstream, but in a way that did not create a kind of economic speculation that one have more and another have less.
To try to make sure that there's not huge disparity between the rich and the poor. I'm sure that in a proper Varnashram society, some people are richer than others, but not exploitive. What else is honest wealth? Cloth, all sorts of textiles, wool, cotton, silk, flax.
Vegetables and fruits.
Yes, yes, we'll get to that in a minute. That's on what do they protect.
Beehives.
So honey. What about jewels? What about other minerals? So mining the earth, getting jewels from the ocean, getting jewels from the earth, getting food from the earth. What about building materials? Wood, stone, things for architecture, things for growing medicines, growing things for cosmetics, soap, lotions. So producing all of these things, that is the job of the Vaishyas. And they can become wealthy by producing, it's got to be honest wealth and natural, genuine wealth.
Investment
in projects. Well, the Vaishya is producing the wealth for everybody else. So these other Varnas are not producing any wealth. And these three are not producing transcendent wisdom. And what's very important for this seminar is these three are not taking care of care. These three Varnas, they're not producing care for the citizens. That's not their job. And what do the Shudras produce? They produce the arts, the trades, the skills. Somebody has to take the materials that the Vaishyas mine and build a house with it. They have to, you know, produce the cloth, to harvest the food, transport the food, cook the food. So what's their interest? And we'll have a quote later on this. So the Brahmanas are interested in truth and liberation. The Brahmanas are interested in transcendence, in moksha. The Shudras are interested in pleasure. The Vaishyas are interested in wealth, and who's interested in material dharma? Kshatriyas. I think that many times in ISKCON we have a very strange idea of the mode of passion. Prabhupada says that if you die in the mode of passion, he said if you die purely in the mode of passion, you will take birth as a king or a very rich man. We think of the mode of passion as people running around the modern cities. You know, traffic jams and people honking their horns. That's not the mode of passion. The mode of passion is an attachment to dharma, material dharma, and righteousness, ethics, morality, helping people. I hear also devotees think of charity as primarily done by people in the mode of goodness. No, it's primarily done by people in the mode of passion. That it's the kshatriyas who want to benefit everyone. They're the philanthropic, altruistic people. Now we're coming to your point. What do they protect? So we've looked at... What do they, right? These are our four Varnas. We've looked at what do they make, what do they give the society? What are they interested in? What drives them? Like I have one devotee friend who's very much a Vaishya, and he's always talking about everything in terms of money. That's how he calculates, you know, this is worth this, my time is worth this amount of time. That's what motivates him. What motivates the Shudra is pleasure, beauty, skills, being expert in skills. What motivates the Brahmanas is transcendence and truth. And what motivates the Kshatriyas is this the right thing to do? Is this ethical? So what do they protect? Oops, sorry. What do they protect? So this is a very interesting concept. That everyone, the Christians call this stewardship. Another interesting English word for protection is to husband. Do you know that? The word husband means to protect. It's a verb. You can husband your sheep. It means you take care of them. You're the steward. You're the caretaker. So everyone is meant to be a protector of something. The Brahmanas are to protect knowledge. The modern Brahmanas exploit knowledge. They take scientific knowledge and they use it to manipulate the people. Just like advertisement, they're taking knowledge of human psychology and using their knowledge to manipulate you so you'll buy something that you don't need and don't want. They're presenting scientific knowledge to promote atheism, or just so they can get a bigger money and more position. But the Brahman's duty is to protect knowledge, to make sure that truth doesn't become spoiled. The Shudra's duties is to protect the arts and the crafts and the skills. The arts and crafts and skills are also meant to be used for Vishnu. That's true for everybody. Just like we had this drama the last two nights. So that's arts and skills being used in devotional service. If any of you saw it, the youth did all these acrobatics and gymnastics, amazing. But they're using it to tell a story. Or if you think of the traditional skills, just like right here across the Jalangi, people are weaving cloth. They've been doing this for generations to protect that. Nowadays, it's not protected. These skills, these arts, first of all, they're all being done to promote, you won't even say sense gratification, because I don't even think anyone's senses are being gratified. But sense agitation. Not even sense gratification. So today the modern arts and skills are used just to disturb everybody's mind and senses, to portray scenes of illicit sex and violence and cruelty and human degradation. The skills are all being done by machines, which is taking away the pride and the happiness that the craftsmen have. It's very satisfying to create something, isn't it? Even if it's just a bowl of rice. There's some satisfaction that's being taken away from the Shudras. They just become a worker in the factory and everything's done for demoniac purposes. Then the Vaishyas are to protect the sources of their wealth. They're supposed to be getting wealth from natural sources and they protect those. So they should be protecting the land, the animals, the rivers, the air. And we find again today the Vaishyas, they're polluting all of these. They're exploiting all of these. And now to our main point, who's supposed to be protecting the people? Kshatriyas. Their role is protection of the people. Now, of course, everyone is in a circle. We'll see that in a minute. It's concentric circles. And their function, Prabhupada speaks about this a lot. The Brahmanas are functioning as a brain. The Kshatriyas as arms. Oh, I have this mixed up. I'm going to fix this. I put them in the wrong circles. Oops. I don't know if I can fix it. When it's on the projector, can I fix it? Look at that. Come on. Go to the right place. There we go. There we go. Okay. So the Brahmanas are acting as the brain, the Kshatriyas as the arms, the Vaishyas as the belly, and the Shudras as the legs. Now, it's very interesting. In our devotee care committee, we've been discussing having some sort of symbol of devotee care, and we're planning, this is advance notice, we're planning on having a contest who can develop a logo for devotee care. And so far what we're using are two hands holding a plant, and our little logo symbol committee was thinking that anything that had to do with care should show hands. Now, who in the society is the hands? You all see where I'm going with this, right? Okay. So here, Srila Prabhupada, again, this is just one sample of dozens or hundreds of quotes. Kshatriyas would take charge of protecting the people in general. Under the protection of Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas would protect the cows, etc. So Kshatriyas were given charge of the protection of the citizens. So this is how it works, that in one sense, the Brahmanas are protecting everyone. Because without Brahminical culture and without proper knowledge, everyone becomes an exploiter. The modern governments are exploiting the people. The modern Vaishyas are exploiting the land, the water, the air, the animals. The modern Shudras are exploiting the arts. Why? Because the modern Brahmanas are exploiting knowledge. And practically, the Vaishyas and Shudras are running everything. So you can't have these things go on without the Brahmanas. But are the Brahmanas going to directly protect the arts, for example? No. Are the Brahmanas going to directly protect the water and this air? No. And are they going to directly protect people? No. Now we can see that Brahmanas would give a certain kind of care of people. What kind of care would Brahmanas give of people directly? Spiritual knowledge. And I would guess also psychological and emotional. Because the Brahmanas are counselors. They're mentors. They're guides.
Also doctors.
Doctors, yes. But it's interesting, the Vedic doctors, some of them are Brahmanas, some of them are Shudras. Depends on which kind of medicine they do. But a Brahmana doctor, Prabhupada describes, would just do what the old doctors used to do. Go door to door. They wouldn't build hospitals. Who has to build the hospitals? With what money? What money? Where do the Kshatriyas get the money?
Taxes.
The Brahmanas don't build the hospitals. They might work in the hospitals. They don't build them. The Brahmanas don't build the schools either. If a Brahmana wants to teach, Prabhupada said, he sits under a tree. Or he sits in a corridor. Right? And just like the Goswamis, they're in Vrindavan, worshipping their deities in a tree. And then some wealthy person comes, I'll build a temple. This is also very interesting. Again, these are just representative quotes. Srila Prabhupada discusses this a lot. The father of Lord Ramachandra, Dasaratha Maharaj, was paid a visit by Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra wanted some demons to be killed. And Prabhupada makes a couple of points. One point he makes, which I don't have in this quote, is that Vishwamitra could have killed the demons directly. But he didn't, because that wasn't the business of a Brahmana. And the other point is the conversation that they had. That Prabhupada said, just like if you meet somebody, you say, oh, how are you? Probably every culture of the world, when you meet someone, how are you doing? So Prabhupada said this would be asked in relationship to Varna. So you see a Brahmana, you say, how's your moksha going? You are trying to conquer over birth and death. Is your process going on nicely, as Prabhupada puts it here. Punar Janma Jayaya. Punar Janma. Taking Punar means again, Janma means birth, Jayaya, to be victorious. What kind of victory are you having over taking birth again? Instead of just, oh, Haribo Prabhu, how are you doing? So are you being victorious over taking birth again? That's what he said. And Vishramrita says to Dasarath, how are things going with taking care of the kingdom? He's not going to ask him, how is it going for moksha? Now, Dasarath, of course, was a pure devotee. He's the father of Rama. But yet his area of working in the society was taking care of the citizens. I really like this quote, where Prabhupada's again speaking about what everybody produces. So here he says, the brahmanas are giving direction. The kshatriyas give the facility. So what does that mean, the facility? There's a sacrifice, you need some facility.
Organization.
Organization, what else?
Yes.
Understand?
Of course,
residence.
Arrangements.
Yes. Like what, specifically? What kind of arrangements? Well, the ingredients would have to be provided by the Vaishyas. They're providing the grains and the ghee. So what are the Kshatriyas providing?
Freedom from disturbances.
Freedom from disturbances. Making sure no demons come and bother your sacrifice. What else? The area. The physical area.
The place.
The place. Yes. And the shudras are offering their labor. So they're all producing something. Okay, here again you see that if you look at Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, that the Brahminical culture is really encouraging everyone to attain moksha, or our interest in moksha, of course, is prema. We're not interested in sayujya moksha. But we are interested, mamcha yogi avichayana bhakti yogena sevate sadhvanam samatitaitam brahma bhuyai kalpate. We're surely interested in getting free of the modes of material nature, right? And under that, there's morality and ethics, then honest wealth, and pious pleasures. So if you think about ISKCON, we're trying to have a lot of these. Nice, healthy prasadam, natural fiber clothes, music, devotional music, drama, architecture. We're starting to have some interest in this. When I first joined ISKCON, we were not interested in honest wealth. We weren't interested in wealth at all. And after a certain time, we thought, well, maybe we should become interested in that. And then when we became interested, we weren't so interested in honest wealth. So there's become now more and more of an interest in honest wealth. And certainly we've always been interested in this, but this is still a problem, isn't it? So here Prabhupada's saying we can't neglect any department. We have to have all the departments. I also really like this quote. He says, there's no instruction from the brahmanas, and even if there are, there's no kshatriya rulers who can follow them. Prabhupada says here, Brahminical culture and kshatriya government will automatically come back. So we very much need both. Because if you don't have kshatriya government, you can't implement the guidance of the brahmanas. There's nothing. You can't do anything with it. So the brahmanas are given guidance. There should be education like this. There should be old age care like this. There should be this. But there's nobody to put it into practice. So I wanted to have quite a bit of time for a discussion on this topic. I wanted to present these ideas and kind of to stimulate some discussion. I teach history of ISKCON at Bhaktivedanta College, and really thinking about how ISKCON has developed. So at first, we definitely have had a place in ISKCON for Shudras and for Brahmanas. I've been to a few temples where there's no Shudras, and that means the plumbing is breaking, the paint is peeling off the walls, everything's falling apart. You know, people are sitting around having conferences on nectar devotion, and the tiles are coming off the floor. I did to a few temples like that. But generally, we understand we need to have Shudras. We need to have people that are going to do manual labor, that have skills. Most temples you go to now, there's a computer tech person, right, who knows how to work everything with the internet and your computer, and there's someone who takes care of the electricity and the trash. And in many temples, there are people who are developing the arts. Although we could do that a lot more, we could really bring back the Vedic arts much more. But at least we understand that that's something that's within the realm of bhakti. We don't seem to have a problem with that. And I don't think we ever did. I think from the beginning of ISKCON, we understood that the people cleaning the floor were just as much devotees as the people dressing the deities. We didn't see a problem. As I said in the beginning, we had a problem with wealth. So for a long time in ISKCON, we thought that if you want to generate wealth, you're nonsense, you're materialistic. And gradually we realized that we would never be able to build temples and publish books and build a society and preach unless there were people generating wealth. And what's happened now in ISKCON is that if you want to generate wealth, you'll get encouragement. It wasn't like that. 20 years ago, it was not like that. If some devotee said, I really want to make a lot of money. Oh, Prabhu, you're in Maya. Just sleep on the floor, you know, eat some khichdi, go out on book distribution and be happy. But now we're encouraging. Yes, make a lot of money. Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told one devotee, you should make material and spiritual wealth. But in getting involved in the devotee care community, really thinking about devotee care, I've seen that there's still a class of people that's not really accepted as part of bhakti, and that are the kshatriyas. First of all, we tend to think of kshatriyas as somebody out on the battlefield. Now, they did go on the battlefield when necessary, but that wasn't their general place. It wasn't that they were always out fighting a war. They were running a country, or they're running a city, or a village even. So even the head of a village, the Prabhupada said a kshatriya can be a landlord. Do you all know what a landlord is? You own a building, and you rent it, so collecting rent. And then what do you do from your rent? You take care of the building. You make sure everyone has water, electricity, and everything's clean, and everything's properly maintained. That we haven't really developed these people. When I look around ISKCON, of course, there must be such people. You can't have a society without Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishya, Shudras. So what are the people with the Kshatriya mentality doing now? Not so much. Some. Because Kshatriya wants to be very independent. Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Brahman, they have a mood of being independent. So some, we have some temple presidents who definitely have a Kshatriya mood. And you will find in those temples, guess what? Guess what there is a lot of in those temples? A lot of discipline, but there's a lot of... What do the Kshatriyas do? There's a lot of devotee care. The mood of a kshatriya is that of a father, taking care of their family, taking care of their children. Please do not think kshatriyas are just military people. Now, we have this idea that the only thing a kshatriya does is walk around with a sword or a gun. It's not a fact. They took care. Now, the main thing that they were doing was, like my Prabhupada calls them, administrators. They were taking care of people. And they made sure that the Vaishyas took care of the natural resources, and they made sure that the Shudras took care of the arts. So when we have temple presidents who are real Kshatriyas, you'll find devotees are cared for. You'll find there's excellent facilities to greet guests, that the buildings are all in excellent repair, that there's facility for the devotees, devotees get what they need. Such people actually have some, in a good way, pride that I take care of people. Also, I find it interesting because Srila Prabhupada says that if you die in a mode of passion, you'll take birth as a king or a very rich man. And I've also seen that such people tend to attract money. I find that those temples tend to have quite a bit of money. Now, of course, they can't get money by taxation. They have to get it by donations. But that's also quite interesting. And where else do we... But that's unusual that we see that temple presidents are kshatriyas. That's the exception. Where else? What else happens to the kshatriyas in our movement? What do they do? They start up their own project, and one of the reasons that I'm giving this seminar is that I started noticing that devotees who have kshatriya nature often have no place to exhibit that in ISKCON. And they will often go outside the movement, and what will they do? They'll start their own independent thing. What sort of thing do they do? What do kshatriyas do? Might run a temple, but they're more likely to do something else. Well, what do they manage? Remember again, what do they like to do?
Some charity.
Some sort of charity. Exactly. They're engaged in some sort of social welfare. Now, do we in ISKCON say, oh, wonderful, why don't you come back into our society and do this for the devotees? What do we say to them? You're doing what? Mundane social work. You're a materialist. So some of them, you know, start their own project of social welfare, where they're giving out food, they're giving out prasada, but you'll find they won't stop at prasada. They'll give out prasada, and then they'll also teach people vocational skills, and they'll give out clothing, and then they'll make a home for battered women, or something like that. They'll be planting, having tree planting. I know of a number of devotees who've gotten involved in these kinds of initiatives. And they're criticized as being materialistic. And what else happens to our kshatriyas?
Maybe they turn negative towards...
Some of them become very... Because kshatriyas also are involved in politics. So if there's no place for them, then it often, just Krishna explains this in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita and again in the 18th chapter. He says we all have our nature. He says our choice is do our nature for Krishna or do our nature for Maya. Now Krishna says in the 18th chapter, he says, if you fight for me, I'll guide you, and if you don't, by your nature, you'll be engaged in warfare. So one point I preach all over the world is whatever nature we have, we have. It's not our eternal nature. Whatever nature I have in this life, I have. It's like whatever hair color I have, I have. I can dye my hair, but it always will look artificial. And the real color will come. Right? See these ladies with black hair and gray roots. Right? With the blonde hair and the black roots. You can have plastic surgery. But you can't really change the nature. It's not that if you have plastic surgery, you're not really old. Like those young men in our drama, they were jumping all over the stage. If you take some 60-year-old man and give him plastic surgery, he can't jump all over the stage. So the actual nature you can't change. Surrender is I take my nature and I use it for Krishna. People think surrender means I offer Krishna somebody else's nature. That's like if I offer Krishna your money. That's not surrender. That's easy. Here, Krishna, I'm giving you his money. What kind of surrender is that? There's no surrender. The surrender is I have to give Krishna my money. I have to give Krishna my nature. If I pretend that I have somebody else's nature and give that to Krishna, what is the meaning of that? So real surrender is I take my nature and I use that for Krishna. And Krishna says, if you don't do that, you'll use it for Maya. So you know when the devotees were trying to get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to say, see Maharaj Prataparudra, and Prabhupada says in one purport there, this is diplomacy used in the service of the Lord. Or Prabhupada praises Raghunath Das Goswami, who used diplomacy to get his father and uncle out of trouble. And the Kshatriyas were governing. Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was a great politician in devotional service. So if we don't have facility for that, then such people cause another kind of politics. Because those are the choices. Or they may pretend that they're Vaishyas, or they may pretend that they're Brahmanas. We see that also. We see them trying to be Vaishyas. I asked one devotee, he was definitely Kshatriya, I said, what is your varna? He said, oh, I'm a Vaishya. I said, no. Vaishyas are again interested in land, animals, natural resources, and producing wealth. So this is what I see happening, and therefore I come to the conclusion that if we want morals and ethics in our movement, I don't know how specific I want to be, but the Brahmanas tend to be very forgiving. So when we have moral and ethical lapses in our leadership, the Brahmanas stance tends to be, well, they're a devotee. It's all right. And then the devotees in general are saying, where's the ethics? Where's the justice? Frankly, the Brahmanas are not that interested in material justice or material ethics. They're interested in transcendence. So I see that as a big complaint in our movement. And also, where's the facilities for the devotees? Where's the facilities for people to produce natural wealth? Where's the facilities for people to produce pious pleasures and transcendent arts? Where's the facilities for education? Where's the facilities for health care, old age care? Who's supposed to provide all that in society? Is it Kshatriyas? So I would suggest that this, to have this ISKCON requires a shift in thinking. Just like at a certain point we shifted, I believe it was in the 90s, we shifted to realize that people who want to make money could also be devotees. In fact, they could be pure devotees. And in fact, we wanted them. We wanted a lot of them. We didn't want only poor members who didn't care about money. If you don't care about money, you're probably not going to make very much of it. You just won't have the impetus. Now we're praising such people. We're taking such people to the front of the temple room and giving them a garland and putting up a plaque in their name and writing an article about them on the internet. This person is giving this much money, correct? Nobody goes to them and says, Prabhu, what's this thing you have with money? Why don't you just study the Shastra? Why? Forget about building this temple of the Vedic planetarium. Just study the Shastra and give this money. Now, who's saying this? So this is what we need to do for the Kshatriyas, to see that the people who have this mentality have a place as devotees, that they can see their role in the society of devotees. And it's only then that we're going to have the physical manifestations of care and society. Because they're the only people who care enough about that to do anything about it. The brahmanas will care theoretically. And the brahmanas will give care in terms of counseling and guidance. So the brahmanas may say, yes, it's important, we should have an old age home. And there should be lots of trees planted, and everyone should have clean water, and everyone should have it. But they're not going to go out and do it. It's not their interest. I'd like to suggest that we have a change of culture, and that we start looking for these people. They must exist. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra have to exist in every society. It's not that they don't exist in our ISKCON or connected with ISKCON. But looking for them, helping them to understand their own nature, and seeing how they can have a place without which there is not a society. There is something. There's ISKCON. There's international Krishna consciousness. But I don't think that there's ISKCON. So I hope that you didn't mind my very revolutionary presentation. And any questions, discussions, we have a microphone here for anyone who wants to ask a question somewhere. Who has the microphone? Oh, there is one there. One for the ladies, one for the men. Okay, questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Well, it's very good to hear you talk about compassion. But in a way, that puts the things not so categorically, because sometimes in the preaching, we hear, I don't know if it's, the older devotee has the same experience, but when talking about kshatriya, vaishya, so categorically that you do not open your mind to think that are the difference inside, that something very, you need to look more, you know, like a sensible eye. Mm. When you were talking about the kshatriya, the leader of kshatriyas, I have an experience that some friends of mine are presenting temple residents in Brazil. And sometimes what we see that some of them are the most vicious, not good, not bad, looking for all the arrangements and worrying about how to pay the rent of the temple and everything else. But sometimes so focused on that. And the other side, they care of the devotees and the way of the relationship, the other things, doesn't happen.
Well, I what I hear you saying is, first of all, that you have to look at more subcategories of the varnas also. That there's different kinds of brahmanas, different kinds of kshatriyas. That's a fact. Different kinds of shudras. I mean, among the shudras, there's some person who's just hammering bricks. And then there's someone who's weaving tapestries and creating symphonies. Yeah. And in each area, they're just like there's some brahmanas who are cooks, and some who are Sanskrit scholars, some who are pujaris. And in the ancient times, some of them were scribes, like human copy machines. So there's great variety. And as far as relationships, the person who's going to be, again, the most concerned about relationships is a kshatriya. They have a sense of family, that they're the father. The brahmanas tend to be detached. They're detached. They love everyone. They care everyone about everyone. But they're not so much involved with creating those relationships within the society as kshatriyas are. The kshatriyas who are going to arrange for the grand festivals and the social gatherings and the way of people interrelating and creating, as Prabhupada said, it's not really family based on love and trust. Thank you.
He says exactly the same thing as you. Almost to the letter. I think you've really identified the right here already. We don't know what we're doing. Sorry.
That's worse.
We don't have a place for the kshatriyas, and that is probably most of my complaints about our movement from outside and from inside, I think, are due to the things that you've identified a lot of the problems. Most of the problems are sociological in this time, it seems. And a lot of those things are, as you listed, are things which we shall chase and most concerned with care.
Care. There can such as a concern with care, people, morals and ethics, and creating infrastructures of care.
I think most of their problems of their thoughts of the again the point of empowerment is as if the Kshatriyas don't get hostility to really manifest their qualities. And through politics, like not getting the possibilities to be themselves, they just leave the movement or try to be something else.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Many one thing you also said this wonderful presentation, I hope from my interpreter, then you give the description which political system are best suited for each one. So I guess we found out in this book that for Brahmanas, anarchy is the best system.
Anarchy.
Yes, because they want to be independent. They don't want to be in control by anyone. Right?
That's a different presentation that I gave.
Oh, you have one about that. Anyway, so just to develop the point, and then Kshatriyas, they like monarchy. This is what where they find themselves properly situated. Shudras have socialism and Vaishyas capitalism. So if we see that our movement is committed with anarchy, not organized properly, it's because what you figure out, there is no Kshatriyas who can set up the rules and engage everybody to work together.
Yes.
This is a common
kind of that's right. I like the way you put that. We've looked at it in terms of what's called organizational culture. So in organizational culture, it can be divided different ways, but the people who study organizational theory and sociology talk about having a... maybe I should just show you that. Should I just show you that presentation? I could show you just a couple. I could show you just a couple slides from. I don't know if I can find it right now. No, I can't find out where it is right now. Because I was going to avoid bringing that up. Let's see. Oh, here we go. So some of the same signs. So these are four ideas of organizational culture. So instead of calling it anarchy, it's called adhocracy. Well, if you do something ad hoc, you do it as it comes up. And an adhocracy, the sociologists say that there's four kinds of culture. An adhocracy culture, a family culture, a market culture, and a hierarchy culture. And adhocracy culture, the way that people deal with things, the way they get things done, is by just mutual adjustments. You mutual with each other. You just kind of work things out informally with each other. In family culture, there's principles. There's principles of respect and caring and. In a market culture, it's governed by meeting commitments. okay, we have this job to do, we have to get it done by this date, by this person, and this person's going to check on it. In a hierarchical culture, there's rules, not principles, but rules. There's a difference. A principle is there should be respect. A rule is you have to do this thing at this time in this way. And again, we have this idea that the adhocracy culture is based on ideas and knowledge. This is from the non-devotees. This is from the sociologists and the business people and the organizational people. And a family culture is centered around people. A market culture is centered on resources. A hierarchical culture is centered around skills. And how is their power? What's the source of power? What keeps everybody in line? In an adhocracy culture, it's collaboration. Collaboration is you work together as equals. And the structures are constantly changing. In a family, it's cooperation. Cooperation, it may not be equal. A family, not everybody's equal, but you all cooperate. You don't exactly collaborate. In a market culture, it's governed by competition. And in a hierarchical culture, by control. So you can see that every society should have elements of all of these cultures. But if you read what was the overall culture Srila Prabhupada wanted, now you can find quotes for all of these from Srila Prabhupada. He'll talk about how competition brings life, how there has to be rules, how we have to collaborate. But whenever Prabhupada talks about ISKCON as a whole, he talks about it as a what? As a family. He talks about it as a family. And I concluded you can't have a whole society that's an adhocracy culture. I mean, we're sort of doing it, but there's big gaps that are missing. And an adhocracy culture works just for the Brahmin community. The Brahmin community can't function much in these cultures. Kind of stops breathing. But I also see that there's some attempt to institute one of these cultures in this country. That's what I'm noticing. I'm noticing that our tendency right now is to have mostly this and this. Those are the two we tend to have. And mostly we function this way. And there's definitely strong attempts to have a lot more of this. There's very strong attempts to have a lot more of this. And there's also strong attempts to have a lot more of this. And there's not a whole lot of attempts to have any of this. But this would be, this was the mood of the Kshatriyas. The mood of the Kshatriyas is the whole society is my family. And the Brahmins, you know, were a little bit apart from it. It was a little separateness, a little detachment. But thank you for bringing that up. I was considering whether to make this part of my presentation or not, and I thought, nah. Thank you. Other points? I mean, that's also important. I mean, we could get into this, and I don't know if this is the right audience for that or not. But we could get into looking at the culture of ISKCON as a whole and looking at how we structure our leadership. So they have, there's a mic over there. Two mics. Yes. Does it work? Yeah. I don't know, you have to like really speak into it like this. No. Is it turned on?
So, yeah, I was just wondering, in a couple, if the husband is like very Brahmin, the wife is more Kshatriya, so what emphasis do you put? Should she follow Brahminical culture or kind of try to do things with husband's cooperation?
Oh, what an interesting question. So there was a, in the Vedic society, people understood that people of the same varna should marry. And of course, nowadays this means marry someone of your same birth caste. So nowadays in India, you have to be of the same caste by birth. And formerly it was done by horoscope. So, I mean, I've also heard devotees say, well, women don't have varna. So what do you ladies think? Are you just like nothing, or do you have a personality? So every woman that I know has varna. Hare Krishna. Actually, Prabhupada talks about the Kshatriya mentality, and he gives the example of a woman. I know I haven't answered your question yet, but I'm getting there. I'm getting in the background. So Prabhupada talks about this king who comes back from a battle, and he tries to get back in the castle, and the guards come to the queen and say, your husband's here. And she says, oh, he must have been victorious. They said, no, he was defeated. She said, oh, he must have been gravely wounded then. They said, no, he's healthy, he's fine. She said, then he's an imposter. Don't let him into the castle. She wouldn't let him. Then he went back to the battle and won. So Prabhupada talks about this. It was interesting that when Prabhupada talks about such a mentality, he talks about it with a woman. And the whole concept of having marriage between varnas must mean that the woman has a varna. How could you talk about a Brahmin man marrying a Brahmin woman unless the woman also had varna? To me, that's very obvious. I don't understand why there's a whole group of... There's a small but vocal group. They're not a lot of people, but they're loud. And they say that, you know, women are nothing. Somehow we're just nothing. And whatever man we marry, we just become that. But if that were true, then when Ajamil married a Sudrani, what would she have done? She would become a Brahmani. But did she? No, she didn't. So there was a big difference when he was married to a Brahmin lady and when he was married to a Sudrani. And my other example is, why do a horoscope? Prabhupada says you do a horoscope to tell what is the varna of the boy and the girl. Because then some people will say, well, yes, the girls have varna, but by birth. So I noticed after Krishna said, Chatur Varna Mayashtam Guna Karma Vivagasha, then he had another verse saying that for women it was janma. You all remember that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Guna Karma for man and janma for women. It's not there, is it? Is there any verse saying that women have varna by birth? No. It says guna karma vibhagasha. So women also have a nature. And that's Krishna Rukmini talking. One of the main points that each of them say is that marriage should be between equals. Now this also gets into a whole other topic, that the way that women used to contribute economically to the society and have a career was they helped their husbands. They didn't have to go off and have a job. Of course, the men didn't usually have to go off and have a job either. They could work from the home. Janaka Pandit says, a happy man is one who works from the home. So if the husband and wife are equal, then they can assist each other. And then the wife serving her husband also means that she's engaging in her varna. Beautiful, isn't it? If she serves her husband and assists her husband, like Draupadi managed all the money. She says in the Mahabharata that she was the only one who knew how much money was coming in and how much money was going out. She says this to Satyabhama. She was basically the secretary of the treasury. Plus, she said she managed the royal enclave of 100,000 people. That's a good-sized city, little city. Well, that's what they were doing. And therefore, marriages between varnas are very much discouraged. And I think they're especially discouraged. They're discouraged for several reasons. The children may come out odd. Then you have varna sankara, basically children you don't know their varna. And you also have, I think, particularly the woman who suffers. Because the woman's supposed to follow the husband, and if the husband has a very different nature, it's going to be quite difficult for the woman. Especially, Krishna Rukmini say they should be equal in renunciation. And the different Varnas have different kinds of renunciation, the different degrees and different kinds. So if the man is very Brahminical and the woman is Kshatriya or Vaishya, then she'll say, what's wrong with you? Why don't you want to have any money? Why don't you want to give me a decent house? Why are we living in this hut after 30 years of marriage? You know, and he's going to say to her, why do you care so much about nice clothes and jewelry? What's wrong with you? So they'll each think the other one is in Maya. And it's not so easy. Now, if it is going to be mixed, it's better if the husband is higher. And again, my own conclusion on this is if a Brahmin woman marries a Kshatriya man, she has to lower her standards in order to follow him. It degrades her. And there's a real concept in the Vedas of making sure that women don't get degraded, of really taking care of women. So even in modern society, if a woman marries a man who's lower than her, it's not... I don't want to give too specific examples, but if you can think about it, you know, if a woman marries a man who's poor and she's rich, if it goes the other way, it's not so much of a concern. If a rich man marries a poorer woman, or a more educated man marries a less educated woman, it's much more socially acceptable. But a highly educated woman marrying an illiterate man, or a very rich woman marrying a very poor man, or an aristocratic woman. And of course, modern society is full of fiction and romance stories of a high-class woman falling in love with a low-class man. But it's very much frowned on. Even modern society really looks down on that. You know, a professor woman marrying a carpenter kind of thing. Because the psychology is the man wants to lead. And the psychology of the woman is she wants to follow. And if you follow somebody who's working in the lower mode, it's very painful. It's very painful. Anyway, nowadays everything is a mess. And as far as possible, obviously, the woman should try to support and follow her husband, but she also has her own nature. And Krishna says, what can repression accomplish? It's just so clear. You can't repress your nature. I don't know, that's what God says, so I'll just believe it. He says you can't do it. He says it in the third chapter, and he says it again in the 18th chapter. 18th is a summary, and where Krishna's repeating the most important points. So I would like to beg, if a man marries a woman who has a very different nature than he has, then part of his care of her is to make sure she has some way of expressing it. I was attending a seminar. How specific should I be here? Anyway, it's entitled Women in Varnashram. So I thought, oh, this will be really interesting. Then it was all about A, Grihastha women. I said, well, that's only one ashram for women, but there's three ashrams for women, not one. And it was only about how women should serve their husbands, which was very nice, but it wasn't about women in Varnashram. And the presenter was making the point about men. He said if a man has a certain nature and he doesn't get a chance to exhibit it in devotional service, he'll feel very frustrated. He's not able to be authentic. And I spoke to him afterwards. I said, it's the same for a woman. If she has no opportunity to use the nature that she has, then it's going to cause actual psychological distress. So best thing is people should marry someone who has a similar nature. There's a reason why that was done in all cultures of the world for millions and millions and millions of years. And if that didn't happen, it's not that you say, okay, now I'll get divorced and marry someone of the same nature. You know, if somehow that didn't happen, then there should be some consideration of both the husband and the wife to let a person express their nature in devotional service. Because it'll come out anyway. You can't just say, well, I won't act like who I am. But it's particularly on the woman to make some adjustment. There's a... I think it was my daughter who said this to me. She made the point that marriage is established by Shastra. Without Shastra, we wouldn't have marriage. We would just have, you know, animals don't get married. We wouldn't have that. It's Shastra that says the way that human beings should have sexual relationships is through marriage. And also all the Shastras of the world say that in the family, the man should be in charge. They all say that, and they all separate the duties somewhat. The woman should have responsibility here, the man should have responsibility here. And that the same place where the institution of marriage is coming, the way to have a happy marriage is also given. So I think we play with this at our peril. If someone thinks, okay, the man should also be responsible for the child care. I mean, obviously, the men should also be kind to their children, help take care of their children if they can. But if you say the men should be responsible for the child care and the women should be responsible for the money, it's not happy. Everybody trying to do everyone else's job. So that was a very long answer. I hope it was okay. Yes?
So I would like to come back to this diagram before. So what's the culture or the mood we should cultivate so this Kshatriya mentality might be good? They get more courage to really take up the... What should be the mood and culture so that these devotees who have this mentality of being a Kshatriya get the space and
I'd say, first of all, to have a mood of family. To have a mood of family rather than adhocracy, bureaucracy, or market. You know, you understand market, right? Business. To get a mood of family. And then also to start preaching that providing facility for people and caring for people is part of building a society of devotees. I know that may be obvious to some extent in a place like Mayapur. Somebody's got to build schools. Somebody's got to provide medical facilities. Somebody's got to take care of the sewage and the water and the food and manage all of that. And that's what we can start preaching like that. And start appreciating people who do those sort of things. Instead of labeling that as, well, that's mundane, that's materialistic. Giving them acknowledgement to this in the society. Wow, this is really wonderful work you're doing. It'd be nice if you could do this for the devotees. It'd be nice if you could do this in connection with Krishna.
Do we attract this kind of people, or is it that we should look also a lot outside?
I'm sure that there, I'm absolutely sure that there are people like this who come to ISKCON. There must be, and I've met many of them. Some of them are properly situated in ISKCON, but it's unusual. And Prabhupada also said, I wish that nice quote. That will come, that through Harikirtan, that will come. We'll both attract those people. And Harikirtan means also preaching the Shastra. It doesn't only mean sitting and having kirtan. It means looking at the Shastra. What kind of a society do we want to create? What Varna we are? Let's just go back. Okay, well, let's look at this. What do you like to make? Well, just think, okay? I'm not asking you to answer this question here. What do you like to make? What energizes you? This is asking, like, what's your food? Each of us have food that we like, correct? Some of you here probably like very spicy food. Some of you don't like spicy food. Some people really like sweets. Other people don't like sweets. Some people really like jackfruit. Other people don't like jackfruit. And there's certain food that's good for your body. If you go to an Ayurvedic doctor, they can tell you, this sort of food will make you healthy, and the food that will make you healthy might not make you healthy. Many years ago, I was served an Ayurvedic meal here in Gurukula. It was a big meal, and afterwards I felt full of energy. So you can tell what your varna is by what gives you energy. It means you're eating the right psychological food. You're eating the psychological food that fits you. So which of these do you like to produce? What energizes you? What interests you? I mean, all devotees are interested in truth, obviously. Yes, but what primary? What's the main thing? What is the main thing? I mean, everyone wants some money. Almost everybody. A few people in the world really don't care at all. This one man in Vrindavan, near where I was staying, he literally lives on the street. He has one blanket, that's his only possession. And he's lived there, they told me, for 11 years. So some people, but generally, except for, you know, avadutas or madmen, all of us want some money. Everybody wants some morality. We all want some pious pleasures. And of course, all devotees are interested in truth, but what is it that drives you? What energizes you? What do you like to protect? What do you like to take care of? Again, what energizes you? What makes you feel alive? So that, you know, you don't want to go to sleep at night. You regret that you have to sleep at night. And you know you're doing something out of your nature when it's exhausting. And you have to force yourself. It's difficult. Of course, every occupation has parts of it that are difficult. I'm not saying that you would enjoy every part. You know, you might enjoy cooking and you don't enjoy washing the dishes afterwards. I mean, that's... I'm not saying like that. But the work in general, does it energize? Does that make some sense?
So this is all Varna, meaning from my the urge we have to do certain kind of activities.
Correct.
Or we need to get trained to have, because Kshatriya nature needs some training.
Well, every Varna needs some training. Even if you're, I mean, unless you're a very low Shudra where all you do is haul sand around. I mean, even if you fix bicycle tires, you need some training. What to speak of how to be a proper Kshatriya, how to be a proper Brahmana. Sometimes we don't understand our Varna until we get some training. Sometimes you might think, oh, I don't like doing this, but it's because you don't know how to do it. I mean, I had that experience that I thought that I didn't like teaching children because I didn't know how. And then I met one of my gurus, Jyotir Mayi, and she taught me how to be a teacher. And then I said, oh, I love this. So ideally, you know, you go to Gurukula and your teacher sees what your nature might be and gives you training in that area and then brings out your propensity. You know, the modern education system is everybody should try a little of everything and maybe something will click. But to some extent, it may be that you have to get the right association and the right training for your natural propensity, but you should be able to judge at least a little bit. You know, do I feel more energized if I'm doing something that's very much the same every day, where I'm very cautious? Do I feel more energized when I have a lot of change in my life and where I'm taking a lot of risks? Do I prefer to deal with jobs or to be with people? Simple things.
So this
okay, try again.
I was saying that this will certainly bring a revelation.
Everything starts with wisdom. It all starts with wisdom. It all starts with teaching. It all starts with ideas. Just for people to start talking about the fact that to build a complete society, you need all four varnas, not just three. And that the service that people with that mentality can provide is the main piece that's missing in this country. The other pieces we have, at least to some extent, but that piece is really, except for a few places, it's really missed. Just start talking about it. Very simple. And start glorifying people in your community who do that kind of thing. Not just people who give counseling and mentoring. That's brahminical. But people who give the kind of care that Kshatriya gives. Yes.
Then this is should be Kshatriya religion. She has Kshatriya religion. Did you see?
Oh, the chief you see. I don't know. I'm not going to go there.
To take care of the
young. Yes. Whatever I am, I'm never satisfied with it. I always want to be something else.
This is also a problem in Islam, because immediately after the step out of the spiritual society in the material world, it's very clear what you are. Without philology, without anything. If you're an ordinary worker, you don't know anything else than being ordinary worker. You're immediately an ordinary worker when you step out. But when it comes to spiritual society, then you hear Shudra is more than Brahma is more than Shudra, then you start thinking, oh, again, you know, we're doing this not to be what I am, but I can be something else. I can start to make it a circus of possibilities. And I'm Brahma. And this is the problem, and the problem starts always in the thought. When Brahmas are trying to do the duty of Kshatriyas, then also others people don't know what should be done. And also in our society, if GPC is Brahmanas and Kshatriyas in one body, if they don't know what is their position in society, or they have both position, this also creates confusion on the lower level.
Or all four, not
yeah,
just
or
all four.
On all levels. Because we understand that during 5,000 years ago, the degradation started with Brahmanas, right? Brahmanas became degraded and all others became. 5,000 years ago, like they came in with that, right? With Brahmanas, because he was the first to play the...
That's right. It starts with the Brahmanas lose the wisdom.
Yeah, so unless the Brahmanas give the ultimate beauty to the Kshatriyas, who rule the society, but just guiding, you know, unless the, I mean, how the Brahmanas go to the details.
Right, basically the Brahmanas should only get involved in the other's duty if there's an emergency.
Yeah. We are using this emergency for quite a long time. Just one small point that once for me it's quite obvious what I don't have any problem with this. What is my vata? So I thought about it, you know, I think I'm shot, I know. His question was, can you kill a person? But it's very, very, it's really surprising to me, you know. Nobody asking something like this, you know. Because this is like you can only escape from this, you know. you feel the person or not.
But that's not...
It's not the only time, it's not the only time.
But that's, I've run into that many times.
But it's also, you're not able to do this, then it's not your job. But then to be shattered, you're not to defend people.
But the mood, what I see is the Kshatriya's main mood is like a father.
Protector.
A protector. So, of course, with the father, if someone tries to kidnap your child or kill your child, you may become violent. But that's not, you don't go around being violent all the time. I mean, the main thing that the father's doing, at least the traditional father, I don't know what anybody does nowadays anymore, but the traditional father, he made sure that the family was taken care of, that there was a residence, that there was some means for food and water and clothing and education. The family was a little kingdom. So that's the main thing that Kshatriya wants to do, is what we call social welfare. It's the main thing Kshatriya wants to do. Like the main thing a Vaishya wants to do is take care of, is generate wealth, basically. That's what they want to do. So, and both Vaishyas and Kshatriyas are very interested in wealth. But Kshatriyas are more interested in wealth than what they can do with it in terms of social welfare. And Kshatriyas are also very interested in morals and ethics and fairness, a sense of justice. Yes.
Thank you for the presentation. I'd like to ask if there's something about these sub-families. How each one is divided?
Probably not in detail right now off the top of my head. It talks a number of places about different kinds of Vaishyas. This is especially in the Indrajagya section of the 10th canto, that some are particularly engaged with the land, some with the animals, some with trade. But those are very broad. Then there's also the different occupations given for the Varnas in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam. But that's also vague. It's not that specific. I mean, among Shudras, that's pretty obvious. There's skilled and unskilled workers. And then among the skilled workers, there's varieties of skills. There's also seems to be degrees of independence. Like Nanda Maharaj was a Vaishya, but he was a ruler of the Vaishyas, so he was almost a Kshatriya. So then you have the other Vaishyas who are more dependent on him. So I see that there's a broad range. That's as far as I can go right now.
Because I think a lot of this confusion, which one or the other one, is because it cannot be.
Because there's so many subcategories. But still, you can still have a general idea. Do I really like protecting people? Do I like to deal with people? Am I a people person? In a general, if I asked everybody here, which I'm not going to do, but if I asked all of you here, I mean, I'm not going to ask you to say it, you can think about it, that if I had a choice, if I had to choose, because all of us like to do things and all of us like to be with people, but if you had to choose, would you rather get something done or be with people? And there's task people and people. That's a very simple thing that you can tell. And then, are you a very cautious person, or are you a risk-taking person? Again, all of us have some caution, or we wouldn't live very long. And all of us have some risk-taking, or we wouldn't live very long. You can't be 100% cautious or 100% risk-taking. But if you had to choose, are you a risk-taking person or a cautious person? So the general categories you can see like that. Does that make sense? And what's your main interest? What enlightens you? Is it physical skills? The Shudras deal with physical skills. Creating things, making things. something with physical competency, where, you know, I make a road, or I clean the room, or I make a beautiful pot, or I make a drama. And they take pride, Sudra takes pride in their skills and their creation. You know, the Vaishnava really likes generating wealth. That's how the Vaishnava sees the world. You see the world in terms of generating wealth, generating prosperity, abundance. And again, whether it's through working with animals, through working with the land, or there's resources in the water, working with the air, going to be concerned with ecology. Satya is really concerned with people. Are people taken care of? Are they all right? Is everybody happy? Being a host. Does everybody have a nice room to stay in? The old people, they're willing to not just that they care about it, it's what they want to do. I mean, we all care about it. Every human being cares, unless they're a demon, that old people are taken care of and sick people are taken care of. But not everybody wants to go and do it and do the work and organize it. Also, kshatriyas are very good at gathering. Kshatriyas don't generate wealth, they gather it. A Vaishya generates wealth. Kshatriya gathers it. And Kshatriyas and ISKCON are doing it through donations because they can't do it through taxation. And they'll often be very, very good at getting a lot of people to give money. And then they take that money and they turn around and they use it for the benefit of the society. Does that energize you? No, or are you the kind of person, do you like to teach and preach? Do you like to study? Do you just like to worship the deity? I mean, there's some brahmanas who are going to care for people, like as doctors or as counselors. But they're not going to go around gathering funds and creating a whole infrastructure. It's quite a difference. So, you know, if you're a counselor, you may want to meet with some people and you'll do a little something. And maybe if somebody happens to give you some money, then you might, like Rupa Goswami, he was given money, he used it to build a temple. So if someone gives you, if someone just comes and hands you money, you might build a hospice. But you're not going to go gathering, collecting the taxes, establishing yourself. Is that all right? So you can look at those sort of things. What are my general tendencies? Especially, what can you do for 12, 14 hours a day, every day, week after week after week after week after week? Because we all enjoy a little of all these things. We all enjoy creating things with physical skills. Everyone enjoys generating some wealth, taking care of others, and dealing with knowledge. But what can you do all the time? Again, what energizes you? What kind of work do you do that you feel like, wow? The work gives you more energy and more, it's your food. You're with your proper food for your psychology. If you just think about it, try to think about some time in your life or different things you do where you feel energized, where you don't want to stop. But you don't say, oh, I need a vacation for this kind of. You hate to take vacations. You can hardly be pulled away from your service. That gives you a real clue as to what kind of nature you have. It's where you fit. Okay. I hope this was some food for thought. And if I said anything you think is wrong or useless, please excuse me. If I said anything that's useful, then I feel very happy. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
possible that you send us these two presentation also?
Yeah, sure.
I can give you my email.
But better thing is you write to me and ask me for them.
Okay, can you give me your...
Yes, and the best thing would be if you did it today.
Okay.
Because today I have good internet, and then I'm going to have either no internet or terrible internet for about 5 days to a week.
Because you're glad for the road to Slovenia. Sure, this is very interesting.
It's Urmila Devi Dasi, U-R-M-I-L-A.